The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine, North Carolina History for Students. Today I'll be reading from Volume 59, Number 2, the Spring 2020 edition of the Tar Heel Junior Historian, and it's called Find Your Voice, North Carolina Government, Politics, and You. The first thing we're going to read is from the Tar Heel Junior Historian Associate Program Director, Jessica Pratt. Hey, y'all. You might think, what do government, politics, and elections have to do with me? I can't even vote yet. The answer is lots. This issue is full of interesting stories about North Carolina government, how it affects you, as well as the many ways to use your voice, even before being able to cast a ballot. Studying and understanding history is a great way to prepare yourself for the time in the future when you can vote for candidates and issues that are important to you. Knowing where we've been and how we got to where we are today will make you a better informed voter. The study and evaluation of primary sources in your history classes for your Tar Heel Junior Historian Association projects and in this magazine are a great way to build critical thinking skills that you can apply to news stories, ads, and speeches on political issues and politicians. What causes are important to you? How can you use the information in this magazine about our state government to plan ways to use your voice as you discover and share the history around you? The next article is the introductory article for the issue, Find Your Voice, North Carolina Government, Politics, and You. And it's written by Raylana Poteet, the North Carolina Museum of History's Curator of Political and Social History. Raylana has been interested in politics since her high school history teacher, Mr. Bosk, made her class read the newspaper every day to prepare for current events pop quizzes. Welcome to this issue of Tar Heel Junior Historian, which is all about politics and government. Quick, can you name the three branches of government? Come on, you know you've talked about them in school, right? But what do these three branches really mean for you and your life? How are kids and teens who are under 18 and can't vote affected by politics? What can young people do to have a say in how their city, state, or country is run? First things first, the answer to my initial question is the executive, the legislative, and the judicial. The people who serve in these three different areas work together in different ways to make, evaluate, and enforce the laws that we live by. Sometimes they even work in opposition to one another. The checks and balances built into the United States Constitution are part of what makes America's democracy strong. In theory, one branch can't become too powerful without the other branches checking it. Here's a sidebar dictionary article, Words to Know. Government, the system or group of people that runs or rules a country, state, or other area. Politics, the actions used to gain and hold governing power in a country, state, or other area, especially the debate between people and parties over who should govern and the choices they make while governing. Back to the article. As you probably know, the three branches do three very different jobs. Use the chart on the opposite page to see what each branch does, who works in each branch, and how long they serve. You can then read articles in this issue that take a closer look at each branch. Remember that the structure of our state government is very similar to our federal government and to local and city and town governments. Each level of government also has many departments and agencies to help support the work of each of its branches. You may have never thought about this before, but there are lots and lots of people in our country who have jobs in government at the local, state, and federal levels, probably even some people that you know. And most Public service government employees are not politicians. For instance, I'm a museum curator who works in the North Carolina Department of Natural and Cultural Resources, while my husband is an engineer who works in the North Carolina Department of Transportation. We do very different things in our jobs, but we both work for the people of North Carolina in agencies that are part of the executive branch. Can you picture yourself as being a part of government someday? You may have dreams of becoming a leader as a mayor, governor, or president, or as a legislator or judge. Or perhaps you can see yourself doing one of the many other jobs at various levels of government that play an important role in supporting our society. But you don't have to work in public service to have a say in how your city, state, or country is run. It may seem like voting is the only way citizens can make an impact on government policies. However, there are many other ways that you can use your voice to make a difference, even if you are too young to cast a vote. Kids just like you all across our state participate in political action on issues that affect them. You can become politically engaged too. You might start by running for an office in your school government, or in a local club or organization you belong to. Or you could step beyond that into the world of adult politics. You might attend a city or town council meeting, or a public hearing, and speak out about a law or a government decision that you disagree with. For instance, a few years ago, several children from my neighborhood spoke at a Wake County Board of Commissioners meeting when our local library was threatened with closure, and their voices helped save the library. Even if you're not comfortable holding a microphone in a room full of people, your presence at a meeting can show elected officials that there are people paying attention who care about the issue at hand. You can also get in touch with office holders directly. It's easy to look online and find the contact information for your local, state, or federal representatives. You can make a call, send an email, or even write a letter expressing your opinion or proposing a way to solve a problem. You can even ask to meet with your representatives in person. In 2011, when the General Assembly considered closing the Zebulon B. Vance Birthplace State Historic Site in Weaversville, Buncombe County, the Vance Birthplace Junior Historians requested a meeting with state representatives from their area to advocate keeping the site open. Spoiler alert, the site is still going strong. Kids and teens can also participate in voter registration drives. You must be 18 or 18 before the upcoming election to register to vote. But people of all ages can encourage people to register and provide voter registration forms. In fact, one of our own Tar Heel Junior Historian Association clubs, RECHS at Rockingham Early College High School, has held voter registration drives. And 17-year-old Charlotte senior David Ledbetter went viral this past summer for distributing sample ballots and voter registration forms to potential voters as they waited in long drive-through lines at local Popeyes. Voter registration drives are a great way for high schoolers to encourage active citizenship among their peers, since many students will be old enough to vote during their senior year. No matter what your age, one of the keys to civic engagement is paying attention to politics. For example, you do know that there is a presidential election in 2020, right? Talk about different candidates and issues with your friends and family. Notice I didn't say argue about. One of the great things about our democracy is that all Americans, even kids too young to vote, are entitled to express their own political opinions. So ask the important adults in your life about who and what they support. Then do your own research. And think about whether you agree with them or not. Watch the news. Read articles. Follow candidates. Most have a website where you can read about their ideas and policies. The more you know about what is going on in the world around you, the more likely you are to take action to seek changes that are important to you. This brings me to two final ways you can find your political voice. Did you know that people of all ages can volunteer for political campaigns? If there is a candidate you strongly support, contact their campaign and ask how you can get involved. You might phone bank, make calls to voters encouraging them to vote for their candidate, deliver campaign flyers to their neighbors, to your neighbors, or even just help around the campaign office. You can also protest laws and political actions you believe are wrong or unjust. Since my office is between the state capitol and the legislative building, I get to see a fair number of people marching for or against various causes, and I've seen plenty of kids taking part in these direct political actions. In particular, recent demonstrations for increasing teacher pay, for respecting women, for respecting science, for combating climate change, and for reducing gun violence have included numerous kids and teens who are carrying signs and banners and making their voices heard. Whether you decide to find your political voice in large or small ways, or just to learn more about your state government, I hope you enjoy this issue of Tar Heel Junior Historian. Here are the captions for the accompanying photographs. Youth carried a banner and led the way during the 2017 Historic Thousands on Jones Street march in Raleigh. The first Historic Thousands on Jones Street occurred in 2007 and now annually mobilizes civil rights groups to protest injustice. Kids and teens gathered to protest gun violence at the Raleigh March for Our Lives on March 24, 2018. Members of the RECHS, Tar Heel Junior Historian Association at Rockingham Early College High School in Rockingham County, conducted a voter registration drive in 2017. Hyde County Civil Rights and School Protest March, February 1969. Beginning in 1968, the African American community boycotted Hyde County schools in response to the county's desegregation plan. In 1970, students set up a table in front of the undergraduate library at UNC Chapel Hill, urging their classmates to sign a petition protesting the invasion of Cambodia. Whatever the cause, young people in North Carolina and around the world are speaking up more than ever. Many young people in North Carolina took part in a climate strike held in Raleigh on September 20, 2019. Sure, we're all shy at times, but when it's an issue that matters, kids are finding the courage to step up and the mic to speak out. Here's the article that Raylana referred to about the three branches of North Carolina government. Executive. This branch carries out or enforces our state laws. Who is in the executive branch? The governor, elected to 4-year terms by voters of the entire state. The Council of State, Lieutenant Governor and 8 other members elected to 4-year terms by voters of entire state. A cabinet, 10 members who run state agencies appointed by the governor. The legislative branch makes laws for our state. Who is in it? The General Assembly, which is made up of the House of Representatives, 120 members elected to 2-year terms by voters in individual districts. And Senate, 50 members elected to 2-year terms by voters in individual districts. The judicial branch interprets and evaluates our state laws. Who is in the judicial branch? The Supreme Court, 7 justices or judges elected to 8-year terms by voters of the entire state. The Court of Appeals, 15 judges elected to 8-year terms by voters of the entire state. Superior Court, 107 judges elected to 8-year terms by voters in 48 districts. And District Courts, 273 judges elected to 4-year terms by voters in 41 districts. The next article is also written by Raylana Poteet, and it's called Discover Your Governors. The executive branch of North Carolina government is headed by the governor, but what exactly does the governor do? Read on to discover the answers to your questions about governors. Question: What does the governor do? Answer: He or she is our top elected official who leads our state. North Carolina's governor serves as the state's official representative. The governor heads the executive branch of our state government and is commander-in-chief of North Carolina's National Guard. He or she also has many other specific responsibilities, including signing into law or choosing to veto bills passed by the General Assembly, preparing a state budget and overseeing the budget passed by the General Assembly, appointing people to certain government jobs, making sure that people follow North Carolina's laws. Governors work to do things that they think will make our state better. Governor Carr Scott, 1949 to 1953 as governor, supported a multi-million dollar bond package for paving dirt roads because he wanted to bring North Carolina farmers out of the mud so that they could get their crops to market. Governor Jim Hunt, governor from 1977 to 1985, and 1993 to 2001, worked hard to improve North Carolina schools. Modern governors also spend a lot of time encouraging new industries to locate or expand in our state. In a New York Times advertisement, outgoing Governor Luther Hodges, governor 1954 to 1961, and incoming Governor Terry Sanford, governor 1961 to 1965, promoted North Carolina as an excellent business location. Question: how does someone become governor? Answer: North Carolina's voters elect our state governor. Every 4 years, candidates run against one another in an election to see who will become the next governor of North Carolina. Typically, a Democrat competes against a Republican. Sometimes there are additional candidates from smaller political parties. During an election campaign, candidates state their positions on various issues affecting the state and tell voters how they think the state should be run. The person who wins the election in November officially becomes governor when he or she is sworn into office at the inauguration the following January. The definition of inauguration is on a sidebar. A ceremony in which a newly elected governor or president takes their oath of office and begins official duties. Question: can anyone become governor of North Carolina? Answer: yes or no. North Carolina's governor can be a man or a woman. He or she can come from any ethnic or religious background, but there are three rules that determine who is eligible or qualified to be chosen to run for governor. Candidates must be at least 30 years old, must have been a citizen of the United States for at least 5 years, and must have lived in North Carolina for at least the 2 years immediately before they run for election. Also, at most, a governor can serve only 2 4-year terms in a row. After that, she or he has to let someone else have a turn. Question: how many governors has North Carolina had? Answer: as of spring 2020, when this magazine was published, 70 people have served as governors since we became a state in 1776. Many men and one woman have led North Carolina through the years. Our governors have come from all across the state and have faced many tough decisions and responsibilities while in office. Question: who is our governor now? Answer: Roy Cooper. Roy Asbury Cooper III, born in 1957, was elected in November 2016. He was sworn in officially as governor of North Carolina at his inauguration on January 1, 2017. Cooper had previously served in the North Carolina General Assembly in both the House of Representatives and the Senate. He is a member of the Democratic Party. Governor Cooper was born and raised in Nash County. He attended public schools and worked summers on the family farm before attending UNC Chapel Hill on a Moorhead scholarship. His mother, Beverly Cooper, worked as a schoolteacher, and his father, Roy Cooper Jr., farmed and practiced law. Here are the photo captions. Governor Roy Cooper and First Lady Kristen Cooper with their daughters, Claire, Hillary, and Natalie. Richard Caswell, governor 1776 to 1780 and 1784 to 1787, the first governor of North Carolina after it became a state, was born in Maryland. Governor Arthur Dobbs, 1754 to 1765, was a royal governor of the colony of North Carolina for more than a decade. Bev Perdue, governor 2009 to 2013, was North Carolina's first female governor. She also served two previous terms as the state's first female lieutenant governor. Elias Carr, governor of North Carolina, sitting at his office desk in 1865. Modern governors spend a lot of time encouraging new industries to locate or expand in our state. In this New York Times advertisement, outgoing governor Luther Hodges, 1954 to 1961, and incoming governor Terry Sanford, 1961 to 1965, promoted North Carolina as an excellent business location. Here's a think about it sidebar. So far, all of North Carolina's governors have been white. Only one has been a woman. How does this compare to most states in U.S. history? How are things changing now? What do you think an article in Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine on governors might look like 100 years in the future? Do you think we will have had more governors who are male, people of color, female, or openly LGBTQ? Question: where does the governor work and live? She or he works in an office in the state capitol and lives in the executive mansion. Governors have worked out of the North Carolina state capitol since that building opened in 1840. Fun fact, the Capitol building sits just across the street from the North Carolina Museum of History. The Executive Mansion is a large, beautiful house located in downtown Raleigh. Since 1894, all of North Carolina's governors and their families have lived there. The Executive Mansion is just a 6-minute walk from the state capitol. The government can walk to work if he or she wants to. Now that's a convenient commute. Question: what is the first lady or first gentleman? Answer: the spouse, wife, or husband of the governor. In the beginning, governors' wives did not have a role. Even in the first part of the 1800s, wives still had no real duties. Several did not even come with their husbands to Raleigh, choosing to stay at home to take care of their families. By the 1900s, first ladies were seen as the state's official hostess, and spent hours each week greeting guests and hosting lunches and receptions for groups visiting the mansion. In the late 1900s, many first spouses began volunteering their time and support to various charities or causes as part of their official duties. Sometimes the first lady is actually a first daughter. Helen Fole served as official hostess for her father, Governor Daniel G. Fole, Governor 1889 to 1891, because her mother had died before he took office. Dottie Martin, 1985 to 1993, brought us flowers. She worked with the North Carolina Department of Transportation to create a highway beautification program that involved planting wildflower beds across the state. You've probably seen the beautiful results of the program from your car windows since the award-winning effort continues today. Bob Eaves, 2009 to 2013, was North Carolina's first and so far only first gentleman. He continued the tradition of first spouses, supporting a variety of causes, and developed three major initiatives during his wife's term: Celebrate North Carolina, Students at Work, and Carolina Helping Heroes. Current First Lady Kristen Cooper, starting in 2017, is using her platform to improve the well-being of children in North Carolina, including tackling childhood hunger and literacy. She also focuses on the arts and nature to ensure that all the children of North Carolina have access to play and thrive creatively. The next article is How Does an Idea Become a Law? It's complicated, and it takes a lot of work by a lot of people. The members of the General Assembly study and debate the idea. People living in North Carolina can also voice their opinions by contacting their representatives. Not all laws make it. At any point along the way, a bill can die and never become law. But for those that do, here are the basic steps that an idea must go through to become a law in North Carolina. Start with a concerned citizen, group, or legislator having an idea and suggesting legislation. Then a representative or senator writes a bill. The bill is introduced to either the House of Representatives or the Senate. A committee reviews the bill and reports on it. The House or Senate passes the bill. The bill goes to the other chamber of the General Assembly. The Senate or House passes the bill. If the bill has been changed, it either returns to the original chamber for a new vote or proceeds to a conference committee. If no changes have been made, the bill is sent to the governor. A conference committee made up of House and Senate members writes a final version of the bill. The House and the Senate pass the final version of the bill. The governor signs the bill. The Secretary of State is given custody of the bill, and it becomes a law. Next, stories from the collection. Did you know that objects tell stories? Your North Carolina Museum of History collects these artifacts, the things that people create, use, and leave behind to bring the state's history to life. Here are a few of those stories. Veto stamp and ink pad from 2009. Governors can veto laws. Veto means to say no to a bill and prevent it from becoming a law. But the veto can be overridden if 3/5 or more of the members of the state legislature vote against the veto. Governor Bev Perdue, 2009 to 2013, used this veto stamp to mark 19 bills or laws that she did not agree with during her term. Inaugural close, 1893 and 2017. An inaugural ball is often held to celebrate the election of a new governor, and of course, it's a fancy affair. First Lady Eleanor Carr wore the gown it left in 1893 to celebrate the inauguration of her husband, Governor Elias Carr. The silk and velvet gown featured the leg of mutton sleeves popular during the 1890s. The dress that current First Lady Kristen Cooper wore in 2017 features a modern asymmetrical neckline. Next to that, the style of Governor Roy Cooper's classic tuxedo was timeless. We've run out of time for today's episode of North Carolina History. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.